in 1994, I went to South Africa, and I received a South African name, Matsumela Mapfumo, and that means firmly rooted soldier.
Yeah. Make it plain.
With Matsumela Mapfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Not the musk of the dusk and the crack of the dawn. We go through episodes too, like Attack of the Clones. What till we break a back and you hear the crack of the bones? Just to get by.
Proposition 8. And we've had a lot of discussion about that already. In fact, we're going to have a bit of a panel discussion on Monday with our own Larry Flick of Sirius IQ 109 and Alexander Robinson, the National Black Justice Coalition. And there's I shared with you all an email that I had received from a listener. Saying that the African-American community would pay, essentially threatening the African-American community, saying that we would pay for the for Proposition 8 being passed, because there was this belief that African-Americans were, and Latinos to some extent, were responsible for the defeat of gay marriage in California. Janice sent me this. I'm just sharing with you quickly, and also for the benefit of our guests. It says, Mark, the gay blogs are buzzing and gay people are pissed off at the black community. If Prop 8 had come before the Democratic primary, Hillary Clinton would be president right now. I would never have supported Obama if I'd known it would have cost me my right to marry. Gay, now, I say that she even associates Obama with Prop 8. I don't know how. Gays all across California and the U.S. are saying the same thing. The black community has lost the political and social support of the gay community. As you would say, gay people are losing their minds over this. Mark my words, Mark. The black community is going to pay a heavy price for bitch slapping the gay community. Janice's words there, in the words of Sarah Palin, right there. Now, that is some of the sentiment that's out there. The cover story, blackcommentator.com. As you know, Black Commentator joins us weekly here on Make It Plain. The cover story, inclusion, Proposition 8 is not about black homophobia. Written by, as I said, a doctoral candidate at the Harvard Divinity School, a graduate of Wellesley and Union Theological Seminary. The Reverend Irene Monroe is our very special guest. Glad to have you back, Reverend Dr. Monroe. How are you?
Oh, I'm just delighted to be here, Mark.
It is a pleasure to have you. Proposition 8 is not about black homophobia. What has been your reaction to some of that sentiment, which, of course, you just heard me read, that's out there, that somehow or another the African-American electorate is responsible for Proposition 8's passage in California?
You know what? This is another example of white gays in our community who have gone amok. It really is. And it's about white privilege. And one of the things that happens with white privilege is that they realize that they have white skin privilege, but that they're oppressed as gays, and they have a disconnect here. As a matter of fact, some folks have told them that they're the new blacks. They got to understand what it means that, yes, you know, this is much bigger than because you have a lot of money to pour into the issue that this is going to, you know, win you what you think you deserve. Because if that's the case, if blacks could have paid their way out of slavery, I'm sure a whole bunch of us would have done that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're missing a big piece here. Another piece here is that black Californians only make up 6.2% of the entire state population. So, you know, there's another kind of disconnect. But I have to say this. My big gripe about it is that it says something about a government that frames a minority group's civil rights as a ballot question for a popular vote. Because clearly, if we as African Americans had to win the popular vote, now, whether we should be free or not, well,
good point.
That answer is. So, I mean, I think the bigger issue is that it needs to be turned on the government. Why would you put someone's civil rights issue, civil rights, as a ballot question and then have people vote on it? That's the bigger issue. But what it did was it made scapegoats out of people.
Yeah, clearly. But I mean, I guess the law states that anybody can get anything on the ballot. I guess you would argue that the government ought to prevent it, though.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And on civil rights issues, definitely. Listen, you're gonna talk about someone's civil rights or as a ballot question. Well, this is different than talking about whether you want to vote for clean air, whether you want to decriminalize marijuana. Whether that's a whole different kind of issue.
You support same-sex marriage yourself?
Absolutely.
Now, you are a theologian, as I pretend to be.
Me too. Same food here.
Well, this is my official position at this hour is that I'm going through a period of discernment on the question myself. Now, you acknowledge in your piece that homophobia within the black community is real, correct?
That's correct.
However, it is not, because of the small percentage primarily, it's not to blame for that. But you also kind of, go into some of the biblical argument that was used against African Americans when it comes to slavery and racism. Let's go right here, Dr. Monroe. The African-American community, those of us in the black church in the vast majority, deal with the issue of marriage literally in the Bible. In your view, why is that a flawed approach?
Well, for a couple of reasons, because when we just solely look at the Bible, what we're not looking at is that there are damning and damaging statements and scriptures about African Americans in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the biblical legitimation for slavery comes out of Ephesians 6:5-18, where Apostle Paul says a slave ought to be obedient, to his master, and also the curse of Ham. So again, this is where you have to have some sort of discernment about what of the Bible are we gonna use and what of it we're not. We're gonna discard. African Americans have been role models in doing this. So it does raise a question when we say, well, because it's in the Bible. Well, there's a lot of stuff in the Bible that says a lot of things about a whole lot of people, and we don't uphold it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the problem. And then when we say, well, it's about the traditional family. Now, let's be honest here, okay? Because of the stresses and strains of racism in this society, we have been creative in creating different types of multiple family structures. I mean, aunts and uncles raising us, a grandmother raising us, and it didn't matter whether they were straight or gay. I mean, if anything, we really devised a model of resistance and liberation about how to keep our families alive. And what we learned out of that was that it's about the spiritual content of the family, not the physical composition.
But yet, you say that Proposition 8 is not about black homophobia, but yet you feel that black homophobia does exist.
Oh, it exists, but it's not. Listen, the reason why that bill passed is not because black folks came out, as they say, 70%. Well, that's 70% of 6.2 of the population. It voted because of the state of California, okay, which comprised of predominantly white folks and other ethnic groups, voted for it. That was just one portion of the population. It raises great questions as why the white queer community targeted us more than anybody else.
And
first of all, we shouldn't be targeted at all, because again, the state of California passed that bill.
Right. That's just California.
That's right.
What will it take, though? Because one of the questions I raised, it had to do with political education and political organizing. I think it's risky, and I think you made the point well. I mean, if desegregation was put on the ballot, Lord have mercy.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine? Let's put desegregation in Alabama on the ballot.
Okay.
All right. We know what would happen, right?
It's like how they voted in this election.
Right.
Oh,
Right. Same thing. Now, And that's, you know, my concern. I mean, you put something on the ballot, and part of the electorate, a significant part of it, you know, finds themselves, you know, religious, whatever denomination that might be. And you're asking people to weigh in on something, and it's hard for them to take off their religious glasses.
That's right.
So it's unless you educate. And this is one of the criticisms I had of those who were organizing opposed to it. First of all, I have yet anybody to say to me, Dr. Monroe, or demonstrate to me that any of the individual, any of the spokespersons that other than the NAACP that favored No One Eight, any of the LGBT spokespersons were people of color.
That's right. That's
now, so, you know, it's not even as if people are looking at someone who looks like them trying to relay a message. That's a flaw.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that it still would have passed, but it seems to me, and again, wearing a theological hat again, that for those who support this, if this is going to be successful, there must be the kind of political education that says, look, this is about a separation from whatever your church beliefs are and the state. And that when you decide on this or decide to vote on this, you know, it doesn't necessarily, it's like everybody, most African-Americans are pro-choice, but I don't mean everybody runs around telling everybody, hey, let's go have an abortion party. Right. It is a choice that an individual makes on their own. Isn't that ultimately the kind of approach that is going to get people to be more accepting of same-sex marriage?
You know, we've had this problem here in Massachusetts here. What white Californians did, and they had much more money than clearly we had. We got this. This was the attitude. We got this because we got the money. And we got big-name celebrities, white ones, that is, supporting this effort. And then all of a sudden, this is what the white queer community does. All of a sudden, when it's they need a photo op moment, and they realize that, oh, we look too white, then they call on us. When they realize, oh, shucks, we got to take them along. We really don't want them, but we got to take them anyway. Then they come, and only come when they realize that their agenda is not going to be pushed. Well, listen, you know, they got to do better pimping than that.
Now, yeah, right. you talk about the issue of white privilege. The fact of the matter is, white gays are still white
every day,
and so, you know, it that's an issue unto itself. So that, you know, one's level of oppression in terms of being gay does not negate one's whiteness necessarily.
That's
okay. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's what I'm kind of getting from.
No, you've said it succinctly. And so what happens is that they have the disconnect. It's not like black queers have, you know, don't have it. And when we try to tell them we need to be at the table at helping you to frame this, they don't want us there. And then all of a sudden, when something goes wrong, then they're going to come crying to us. Listen, they've made no inroads into the black queer community, let alone the black community. They said they had this. I mean, unabashedly, we got this. Thank you, but no thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there you have it. You know, and then on top of it, some of them lost their righteous mind. I can't cuss because on a good damn lost their righteous mind and call folks the N-word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they lost their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they totally tore their bridges.
Yeah.
With us.
Yeah. So you mean there were people using the N-word after this?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like Bull Connors, you know, child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just rose up in that moment.
Right. Yeah. And that takes us back to square one.
That's right.
You know, if you have the privilege to call me the N-word, yet you want me to buy into some level of oppression that you're suffering, that doesn't translate.
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's deep.
Mm-mm. And, you know, and there are issues here, and I mean, there really is, and you know, and it, unfortunately, you know, you'd say, oh, well, that's only particular to California, you know, the sort of racial divide within the lesbian gay community, but it, unfortunately, it isn't. It is pandemic. It is in every community across the country, because racism is what racism is, and it's very hard to deal with these children to say, listen here, if you can't make the connection, okay, we're not saying that they're equal, that race, that you need to build some coalition with other people of color and not be so single-minded around your issue, you might get some help, okay, spiritually as well as in politically.
866-99-SERIOUS, the Reverend Dr. Irene Monroe, blackcommentator.com, her cover story this week of Proposition 8 is not about black homophobia. Blackcommentator.com joins us every Thursday here on Make It Plain. A couple of points that I've been hit with. One, this black African-American voters should treat this the same way as interracial marriage. Is that accurate, you think? I mean, in other words, you know, African-Americans, the passage and acceptance of interracial marriage in the minds of African-Americans, they should view same-sex marriage in the same way and therefore support it. Does that parallel for you?
Not all of it, but I understand the parallel. I mean, I think they should support it for a couple of reasons. One, marriage equality has always been an issue here for us as African-American, and clearly, first of all, as slaves, sort of consecrating our unions, and of course the right as African Americans to marry whomever we want, and of course, so the next step definitely is then they, if nothing else, they should understand the parallel here that in terms of the argument, and then as a matter of fact, the NAACP a couple of years ago put out a statement about that.
Yeah.
And which was really quite profound and needed at the time. And so, absolutely, there is a parallel there, absolutely.
Okay. 866-99-SERIOUS, 866-997-4744. We got a lot of calls already. This I forewarn you that this has been a very heated discussion on all sides. I have been criticized as a minister for even allowing this kind of this blasphemous discussion to occur, as you can imagine.
It could, absolutely.
And, but, you know, but, and all of that. And so we want to get some of these calls in, and I'm glad Dr. Monroe is here to with us to have this conversation. Jerry's in California. Jerry, God bless you. How did you vote on this, Jerry?
Oh, I definitely voted no. I'm a gay white man who grew up in Mobile, Alabama. I've talked to you once before, Mark. I appreciate everything that Dr. Monroe said. I really don't know what else to add to that, except that it does sting a little bit when she says the white queer community in the things that they have done. Well, not all of us feel the way that Dr. Monroe thinks that the white queer community is reacting to this. I mean, I personally don't, because I saw what happened in the South and worked to change, worked in my ways to do what I could to change the religious views of those around me at the time when religion was being manipulated in the Baptist church to keep blacks and whites from marrying. And I've seen religion in the Baptist church manipulated so many times at the convenience of the minorities, that it just it hurts to hear it as a conversation piece around this. And Dr. Monroe is so correct. No civil rights issue should ever be voted on by the majority. But we are the only community left where that can happen. We're the only group left where the majority can vote on our civil rights. And somehow or another, we have to go in and change religious views. We have to do all these other things when it should never, never be the issue at all. It is not. That is the reason for separation of church and state. And I know you're struggling with this, Mark, and I hope you will see that it is not a religious issue. And that's what we've got to do a better case of doing is educating about that. So
let me get a response, Dr. Monroe.
I think there are two things. I certainly agree with the caller, but I also think that the queer community needs to educate itself. And mm-hmm. one of the big problems has been, particularly not just with straight African Americans, but also with its gay and lesbian African Americans, is its appropriation of a black narrative to affix to its struggle. And what I mean by that is that, yes, there are parallels, but it is not the same. So the point is that here it is, people who are suffering. And my part is that they don't live in the suffering, because I think in some sense if they lived in the suffering, and I think part of the reason why they don't is because they have some sense of white privilege, that they could better articulate their struggle. And I'll give you one example of that, is that whenever it talks about its struggle, it constantly appropriates black images of the civil rights movement. And what it fails to do is that it has its own narrative, and it doesn't pull from its own story. It's like, and at one moment it did, which was very poignant, and not only did the country understand it, but the entire world did, was Matthew Shepard. We need to see the suffering of queer people. But we, what they do is that, look, instead of turn the mirror on themselves, they turn it and say, look, we're going to just pull from this literature here, from this history here. You know, and I'm not saying that there aren't parallels, but as African Americans, as we were struggling during the civil rights movement, we didn't pull from the Holocaust because we had a lot of our own material to pull from. The queer community doesn't do that, and part of it, I argue, is because they don't understand their own oppression. So I think that as much as it's rather hubris of them to say, well, we're going to go out and educate the black community, the Latino community, the Christian community about its homophobia, when in essence they don't understand their struggle.
Good point. Jerry?
I'm not quite sure where to go with that. I apologize if we mistakenly have appropriated anything from the civil rights movement. Then I think there's just some things that maybe we can use as an example without appropriating them. I'm from a generation. I'm from a generation that is, you know, what I remember, and maybe that's why I appropriated. You know, maybe the younger gays and lesbians don't, but you know that's what I saw growing up, and so when I see it now, you know, it hurts me the same way that I saw people being hurt when I grew up.
Well, Jerry, one correction: you mentioned that you all are the group that is the only one that, I believe the term you use, has its civil rights on the ballot.
We're the only group left where any kind of amendment like this can be put on a ballot.
Well, let's go back to California. What was Prop 209 that ended affirmative action? You know, so I don't agree, you know, again, you know, when you say that. And I respect you, Jerry. I know what you're trying to say. But what that does is, you know, I think that's what Irene is alluding to. When people make those kinds of statements, you know, even they can be sort of a turnoff. You know, you never win when you play the game of my community is more oppressed than yours, or my community has been through as much as yours has, or the same as yours has, and all of that. And I think that's what Irene is alluding to. You know, I don't think you ever get anywhere in any case, because I mean, blacks and Jews have gone through that. I mean, it's just, you know, we all know what everybody's been through. When we start playing that game, well, I'm going through more than what you've been through, and I'm the only one going through this. And see, let's face it, African Americans didn't turn around in California and go to war against gays and Jews and Latinos and everybody else for Proposition 209 when that clown Ward Connolly put it out there. So, I mean, you know, we understood what that was. You know, we're in a struggle against white privilege and white supremacy. So are you. We are not the enemy, but I don't think, you know, we get anywhere by playing this game of, you know,
I didn't mean it that way.
I know you didn't mean it, Jerry. I know you're sincere, but you get my point.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Thank you, man.
All right. Take care.
Take care yourself. All right. Take care too. Thomas in Kansas City. God bless you, Thomas. You're on the air with Reverend Dr. Irene Monroe of blackcommentator.com. Go right ahead.
Yes, Mark. It's my first time calling, and I've
Welcome.
Listened several times, and I wish to compliment that we can discuss this matter, and I certainly appreciate you bringing it up. And your last point was, I think, right on target with where I was going. is that the I don't live in California, but even watching cable TV and seeing the news programs, I know that there were African Americans, prominent African Americans, who were vocally in opposition to Prop 9. Michael Jordan was one of them, I believe. And so I think on that point, I wanted
You mean Prop 8?
Prop 8, yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
and the NAACP as well. The NAACP.
Yeah, well, that's true. But right. I think a moment ago you said that the NAACP, and the other inference is just as you made a very salient point. Well, first off, I want to compliment the doctor in saying that I agree with her that these issues are not equivalent, and that I don't think that anyone can compare the suffering of the African American experience to the suffering of a gay and lesbian people. As a gay man, I certainly know that I have the capacity to hide in my community. But to take your last point, which I think is very salient, that to say one community's oppression is worse or better than another is certainly not useful. And I would say that the doctor's inference a moment ago that that a lot of gay and lesbian people are hiding behind white privilege is certainly playing that same card, and I find that a little offensive. And certainly it doesn't forward this debate. It doesn't help us. We need to come together. We need to understand each other's experiences, and we need to show appreciation and respect for each other's experiences and oppression, and certainly go forward from there.
Let me get Dr. Monroe to respond to that. The caller says that's a little bit offensive, Dr. Monroe. What is your reaction to that?
And it's offensive to us equally as well. And I certainly hear what he's saying, but the point about it is that we can't come together unless we address it. I mean, I think that white privilege in the gay community is on the down low. But actually, it is really, to be quite honest, no offense, he may not understand, it's really buck wild. It is really
well, again, and with all due respect, Doctor, again, when you say things like, you may not understand, and you're right, I don't understand what the African-American experience, and I do think that there is significant racism within the white community and certainly among gay and lesbian people, just as one might say that same argument with regard to the African-American people and their experience or understanding of gay and lesbian issues. So to take issue with one community and saying that your homophobia is certainly understandable, and yet and so it was inappropriate for the gay and lesbian community to address and try to inform communities of that issue is not useful. And then at the same token, to say that it is inherently useful to point out white privilege, and that is, I think both exist, and I think both are salient and both need to be addressed.
You know, and there's no way that I haven't said that both needs to be addressed. But but the point about it is that we have to come together. Well, the reason why we're not coming together, and when you're talking about homophobia in the black community, you're talking primarily about black heterosexuals. What I'm talking about is that there is a divide, a racial divide within the queer community. There hasn't been, and it's white privilege why that line has not been addressed. So my point is one thing to say we're going to go out and educate the black, you know, black community, meaning primarily the black heterosexual community, about homophobia, because clearly we understand it. We live it every day in our communities. But the question is that y'all haven't come to us. You folks, and I'm not saying you specifically, but I'm talking about in a general term, that when you frame anything, whether it's the issue around same-sex marriage, whether it's around AIDS, you do not call black folks or people of color at the table. You basically want to pimp us for a social op moment. I mean, for a photo op moment. So the point about it is that when we don't come calling, then all of a sudden it's like, well, we got to come together. Well, listen, you missed the ball on it. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't come together, but you certainly missed the ball on this issue by not doing the kind of in-road work first with the black community to say, look, how do we reach the black straight community? Help us frame it. Help us make that kind of coalition that needs to be done so this thing can pass in our favor. That work wasn't done. Ask any of the black queer folks out there.
Well, and the caller hung up, but Let me just say this, Thomas in Kansas, if you all listen, if you heard what you said, Thomas, and if you all heard Thomas say, he made a very critical statement. And he said he is able to hide within his own community. And I think that is the very clear distinction that we're talking about. You know, I brought up Proposition 209 because my man brought up the other piece. You know, we don't know, for example, we assume that many in the LGBT community did not support Prop 209, which effectively ended affirmative action in California. But we don't know that because of the ability to hide. And the other thing I would offer to Dr. Monroe, I don't know, and I know you acknowledge black homophobia, but I'm a little more hesitant to assign some of the characteristics and traits of white supremacy to the victims of white supremacy. That's, you know, I don't necessarily buy into black folk being racist, for example, because I think that racism, xenophobia, homophobia, all of that require power and the ability to apply that. And I don't think systemically, frankly, that African Americans have been homophobic to the point where, you know, people who are LGBT have been oppressed at the hands of African Americans as they have at the hands of others.
That's right. Thank you very much. That's right.
And so, as a matter of fact, and people can have a problem with don't ask, don't tell, right?
That's right.
But correct me if I'm wrong, I frankly think don't ask, don't tell came out of the black church.
Down low, right?
Yeah. I mean, but what it was is we've known in our churches and our families about people's sexuality. And I don't know that people were abused or discriminated against as much as they were put in a position to deny it. That's not necessarily good. But the oppression of the LGBT community, and I think this is what your article alludes to, is not at the hands of the black community any more than some folk during the campaign early on wanted to say that, you know, discrimination against Latinos was coming from the black community. Mm-hmm. You know, how can another group of victims of the same racism and white supremacy then be assign the same faults as their own oppressors? You know, I think that's one of the tricks and one of the divide and conquer strategies you talk about in your article. And Thomas and others, I encourage you all to read it. Proposition 8 is not about black homophobia. Blackcommentator.com. I want to take a quick break and we'll come back and take some more calls, okay? The Reverend Dr. Irene Monroe, blackcommentator.com. Plenty more calls. We'll be right back. This is Serious Left, 146 MIP.
Matsumela Mafumo.
Mark Thompson.
I am Matsumela Mafumo. Happy anniversary, one and all. Tomorrow, 1 year since we've been on Sirius Radio. Glad to be here with you. Sirius Left 146. BlackCommentator.com joins us here on Sirius Left 146 every Thursday. We're always happy to be joined by a member of the editorial board who has the cover story this week, Inclusion. Proposition 8 is not about black homophobia. The Reverend Dr. Irene Monroe. Dr. Monroe, let's get a few of the calls in. Boy, this time flies. Marty's in Indianapolis. Marty, God bless you. You're on the air with Reverend Dr. Irene Monroe. Go right ahead.
Hey, Mark. I've listened to you for the past 3 or 4 days talk about this, and I really agree with a lot of what you say about the education part of it. But I have to take you to task a little bit about it seems like that you were scapegoating GLBT groups and not in having like token representatives or spokespeople that not you specifically but your guests. And I know myself as an activist, it's very hard to even have African Americans that are willing to be out and be active in because of the level of homophobia in their own in families. Their cost is a lot higher than it is when at least in my experience with my friends, is a lot higher when they come out. You know, they're kicked out, they lose their place to live, they lose their family. So I think it's a lot more difficult to have African American spokespeople out there on gay issues that are gay.
Well, Irene, would you like to respond? Irene, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go right ahead.
Okay, one is that I'm not a token here, and I don't think that you chose me as a token. So I want to make that clear.
No, I mean a token as in GLBT groups that are looking for African Americans to be spokespeople for. I'm just saying there aren't a lot of African Americans, at least here in Indianapolis where I am, and it's a fairly urban city. I know of maybe 3 activists that are African American, and it's difficult to have that representation when you don't have people that are out.
Okay, well, then in that case, then I want to pick up your word token then. Because indeed, though, because the way in which the white queer community want to use us is as their token. It's not a dialogue between how we could help address the issue. It's like they have set and framed the platform, and basically they want us to be puppets in it. So the point about it is not to ignore the fact that homophobia is in the African American community, and I think that what I have a problem with is that it's in the African American community, it's in the Latino community.
Mm-hmm.
But wait a minute, hold up. It's in the white community. look at your Christian conservatives. And I think what happens here is that when you don't look at African Americans within the larger context of being Christian, then you are targeting them. They voted like what Christians do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what forms it. Now, I'm not saying that as Christians, meaning not just African Americans, but the entire community has the right viewpoint on the issue. But let's be real, though. They are part of what's called American Christianity. They voted like Christians did, and they voted culturally, too, like African Americans did. If you want to address homophobia, I'm still troubled.
Irene?
Yeah.
You say you're still troubled. I thought we lost you for a minute.
About in their approach of it, first of all, they have no they have no relationship with black queers in the community, and number two, go and talk. What you needed to target more was the Mormons. They put all that money into the measure.
Well, and I totally agree with you on to that extent. I mean, the Christian community.
Let her finish. Go ahead, Irene.
Okay. See, my point is, I don't quite understand why they're going after African Americans.
Right.
Listen, your bigger enemy was the millions of dollars that the Mormon Church. Because listen, we didn't put a cent into that measure. Okay.
Right. Let me just share this, just for information. Marty, you mentioned overwhelming homophobia in the black community. Michael just sent me an email talking about that. And see, so what I hear is as if homophobia is exclusive and so overwhelmingly disproportionate in the black community. And what Irene is saying, that's not true.
Well,
where do we get the impression that black folk are just so much more homophobic than anybody else?
Well, I would get the impression from that when I go to a gay and lesbian club where 98% of the people there are black, and there are only three people in our entire city of 700,000 people. And, you know, I may be off by, you know, a couple. There may be a couple of people that I don't know in the activist community. But there's a reason why all those people in those clubs and stuff aren't coming out, aren't coming out and being vocal.
Okay. Well, there are two reasons why they're not coming out. Okay.
Right.
I mean, I think the thing that gets me, and I'm by no means, Mark, as well as the caller trying to say that homophobia doesn't exist in the African American community, because indeed it does, and our biggest struggle have been is because it is shaped around a kind of Christian, you know, ethos. But there are two things why we're not out. When we come out, where would we come out and be? Live in the white community?
I don't
get that. The point is that we have to make this. See, we have to make this decision here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do we now leave our black community? Because they will do this theological qualifier with us. Those who don't throw us up love the sinner but hate the sin. Or do we put ourselves in complete alienation and isolation by living in a white community a white gay community? That just doesn't exist. But see, I think they're missing two things. First of all is that nobody's addressing, none of the callers, and they've been white ones, have not addressed just the intrinsic racism in the queer community. Number two, they're not addressing, it was the Mormons, and I'm not placing blames, who spent enormous amount of money campaigning their position on the issue. And number three is that California turned that proposition around. Not black people. There were only 6.2% of the population. But I tell you where it comes from, because they think, because we have struggled as black people in this country, we should have some empathy and solidarity with their struggle. And my argument is that we would if there was some communication with them.
Mm. Yeah. Marty, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
The other thing, too, is just to make the same point another way. If somebody's black and gay, now we know that gay people are oppressed. We know that black people are oppressed. So why would you come out? You want to be doubly oppressed, right? I mean, you know, you got to. It's eeny, meeny, miny, mo. I'm black, I'm going to be oppressed. I'm gay, I'm going to be oppressed. So I'm going to go out and announce the world, hey, I'm black and gay, and everything's just going to fall in my lap. So, you know, it's not a whole lot of incentive to identify yourself as a part of two oppressed groups. Willie in Houston, God bless you.
How y'all doing?
Fine, how are you? You're fine, thank you. Real quick.
I'm doing good. Hey, you know what? Homophobe is a joke, man. I mean, it's amazing how we throw that word around. The average black, and I'm speaking for myself, is social conservative, man. It ain't got nothing to do with hating somebody. I don't care what these people do, they can swing from a chandelier unless they bend it. But we cannot redefine marriage, man. Any Christian cannot do that. It ain't got nothing to do with hate. It ain't got nothing to do with what kind of live their life. As Christians, we cannot redefine marriage. And that's the bottom line. And I'm going to, and Monday you had somebody on your show, I think it was a female, I forgot her name, and she said she was a gay Christian. So I don't care what people call themselves, but that's not true. A Christian cannot practice, listen to my term, cannot practice sin. Now, we fall short, but we can't live where we live in it and call ourselves a Christian. And I ain't got nothing against her. But we got to start calling it like it is. If you put
so you're saying homosexuality is a sin?
It's a sin.
Okay, let me let the theologian respond. Dr. Monroe.
Well, you know, see, this is a parallel argument because he says, look,
that was it Christian conservatives in no way can support same-sex marriage. Well, you know, that's the same argument when they argued about slavery, or when they argued the case around Mildred Loving versus the state of Virginia in terms of interracial marriage. So, I mean, that's more about him emoting than really looking at what really here is at stake here, and what kind of Christian are you?
Oh, that's apples and oranges, ma'am. You cannot.
Let her finish.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Because if you're a Christian and you're saying I'm about justice, then it has to in some way, passionate way about what is the right thing to do about this. Because you can't use the Bible as the only source at this issue. And then to speak about the Bible, I just want to lift this up, too, as one that I presume have read his Bible thoroughly. When you look in the Bible, you see a number of family units, different types of marriages. It raises questions. David had a whole lot of wives.
Mm.
I mean, and listen, so you got to be careful when you raise that argument about, well, as a Christian, you know, I'm following what the Bible says, because there are a whole lot of different types of marriages in the Bible.
Right. Good point. We'll take another quick break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up with Reverend Dr. Irene Monroe, blackcommentator.com. The cover story this week, Proposition 8, is not about black homophobia. This is Sirius Left 146 MIP. Breaking news. More and more reports are coming in confirming that Barack Obama is seriously considering appointing to the position of Secretary of State Senator Hillary Clinton. There were some rumors and speculation about that, but those rumors are being more and more confirmed as the hours go by. CNN just confirmed it. So I want to just share that with you before we leave the airwaves. Senator Hillary Clinton is seriously being considered for the position of Secretary of State. Proposition 8 is not about black homophobia. At blackcommentator.com, the Reverend Dr. Irene Monroe. We appreciate you, Dr. Monroe, as always, okay?
It's been my pleasure, Mark.
All right, good discussion. We'll talk again anytime.
All right.
Take care now. Don't forget, folks, blackcommentator.com.